The following show is a replay of KTQA Daily Briefing. For more information, please call 253-330-8821 or visit us online at daily.ktqa.org. Good afternoon. It is 33 minutes after the hour of 3 o'clock. It is Wednesday, April 29th, 2020, and you are listening to today's KTQA Daily Briefing. I'm back, and I'm still Sam. I didn't go to change that. And with me, as usual, is the person who has been holding the fort with my thanks for the last couple days, and that's Becky. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you're back. But I'm also glad that you had the opportunity to have a little rest and a few days off.
I like that you've been lying to people.
Have I been lying
to people? You've been lying to people. I kind of wish you'd let me in a little bit on the secret, but you're like, "Oh, Sam's just taking it easy. He's fine. He's fishing or whatever."
Well, not fishing, because, you know, state parks are still closed.
Right, but you've been doing the radio equivalent of, "Sam's fine. He went to live on a farm upstate."
Well, you didn't go to live on a farm upstate.
No.
But not even what the euphemism suggests.
But it feels a little bit that way.
Sure. You were under the weather, for sure.
On Sunday, I was getting ready to do some stuff that was... We were going to have some big announcements this week and do the other radio show that I do. And I woke up and I had a temperature of 101.8. And... I had started coughing, and I had been outside a couple days before, but I didn't, like, really go anywhere or speak to anyone, so it was a little weird to me, but we were pretty worried, or at least I was pretty worried. The coughing could have gone either way, because it is spring, and I have allergies. My eyes are practically glued shut right now. I'm waiting for my allergy medication to kick in. And it turned out to be an infection of a completely other type. So it took me a couple days to kick it. And then I took one more day just to make sure that I was all right. And I am. So, but it was a little scary for a moment there. I won't lie to you.
It was. And I didn't want to scare radio listeners so much. So I was doing that. Yeah, he's just taking a day off.
For me, it's the honesty versus not frightening people thing, and given what we do here, this makes it sound like I'm castigating you or saying you did a bad job. You did fine. You did absolutely fine.
It was a balance, and I chose one end of the balance beam, one end of the seesaw.
Yeah, So I'm not playing Monday morning quarterback here. I mean, you did the interviews, you did the updates, and you did all of that on top of all the duties that you have to do as a member of the public school education
collective
parade. Let's call it a parade. And for that, you have my sincere thanks.
Well, thank you, Sam.
Meanwhile, as I said, right at 3 o'clock, Governor Inslee had a press conference at the top of the hour, and given the proximity to May 4th, which was when he last said we were going to lift the stay-at-home order was going to be lifted, and also that the CDC model was, last time I had checked, which I grant was more than a week ago now, May 15th would be a better date to lift the stay-at-home order. I was expecting an extension, just a full-on extension of the stay-at-home order, and just, you know, go with that. But Washington State, because we adopted the stay-at-home order as quickly as we did, managed to not get as sick as other states like New York and actually my home state of Illinois. So it's going to be lifted, but it's going to be lifted in a sort of a graded way. We'll have that more in the briefing. So press conference is ongoing. We're going to go back and watch the rest of it when this is over. And if there's any big updates, we'll append it to the 6 o'clock airing and then have a separate post about it on the website at daily.ktqa.org. So that's where we are. And why don't we get to the actual updates?
Well, yeah. As always, state-level updates on COVID-19 can be found online in multiple languages at coronavirus.wa.gov. I'm certain that Inslee's briefings will be there shortly as well. And all of the data that he's been mentioning and going off of are also there. Dialing 311 will get you to the City of Tacoma's non-emergency information line. State Health Department officials are staffing the coronavirus Q&A line 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days a week at 1-800-525-0127. For interpreters in other languages, press pound when they answer and say your language. You can text the coronavirus hotline at 211-211 in any language. Dialing 211 will connect you to community resources statewide through the United Way. And you can also visit the United Way online at wa211.org.
Moving on to Washington State, the governor addressed the public just before airtime, or rather right at airtime, which is why we're late, and indicated that his stay-at-home order will remain in effect beyond May 4th, with the gradual lifting of restrictions according to public health data, availability of testing equipment, and capacity of the state healthcare system. Guidance for the resumption of non-urgent surgeries will also be forthcoming. The governor also issued further updated guidelines for how construction work across the state can resume. Construction that was contracted or was permitted to begin before March 23rd may now resume. Only projects that where physical distancing can be maintained are permitted. Projects must have a COVID-19 safety plan and COVID-19 coordinator, and the comprehensive plan must be posted at the job site.
Regionally, shoppers at Costco will need to wear face coverings starting May 4th. The requirement doesn't apply to infants under age 2 or anyone unable to wear a mask because of medical conditions. The Pierce County Bar Association is hosting a virtual lunch and learn meeting tomorrow on tenant landlord rights and responsibilities during the COVID-19 pandemic. That's tomorrow, April 30th at 11:30 a.m. Participants will be able to ask attorneys questions about the effects of the current eviction moratorium. Details on how to join the Zoom meeting are available by calling Tacoma Pro Bono at 253-572-5134 or by visiting Facebook and searching Tacoma Pro Bono, all one word. Details on other free legal aid are also available at tacomaprobono.org.
Moving on to Tacoma, the city is launching Tea Town Hall, a virtual series on topics of public health and the local economy. The first event will take place Thursday, April 30th at 6 p.m. with a focus on Tacoma's rental assistance program. To virtually attend the series with a computer or a smart device, go to cityoftacoma.org and follow links in the news section. To listen to the series by phone, call 311 for instructions. So that's what we've got for updates today. Again, there's a press conference currently ongoing. If there's any more news, we will move. We will in append to some updates to the end of the 6 o'clock airing of today's daily briefing. Anything else to add?
Well, just in that briefing, the governor hinted that Friday would have a lot more information in terms of timelines and when things might start to be phased in. Mm-hmm. So we're expecting some more things by Friday if we don't see them at coronavirus.wa.gov. I've only said it 48 times since March 20th.
I suspect on that day as well, if the briefing overlaps with the show, we will postpone the show until the briefing is over, because that's going to probably be a lot more data heavy or reportable data heavy. This was a pretty data heavy update, but it was all graphs and metrics and stuff like that and all stuff I've seen, but not stuff that really translates into briefing quality stuff, because the order of the day here is to what's actionable, what can people in Tacoma do, what if we're required to take some action, what action is it, not the scientific stuff. We're not scientists here, so.
But it is pretty cool that all of the data that health officials and elected officials are making decisions off of are really widely available through the public health departments.
Yeah, I've been following what I can. I'll put it that way. So that's all we've got for today. Anything else to add there?
Don't think so. I was really having fun with today's interview.
That's good. So dialing 311 will connect you to the City of Tacoma non-emergency information line. Dialing 211 will connect you to statewide community resources through the United Way. Our email address is daily@ktqa.org. You can call or text us at 253-330-8821. And you can find everything we've said today at our website at daily.ktqa.org. Now on to the interview.
With me today is Malia Somerville. She is the Marine Mammal and Birds Curator at Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me today on KTQA Daily Briefing. So what exactly do you get to do at Point Defiance as Curator of Marine Mammals and Birds?
So as a curator, I help supervise the animal care specialists who take care of the animals, particularly in the Rocky Shores and Tundra areas of the zoo. For your listeners who are familiar, the areas with the walrus and sea lions, as well as the polar bears and fox.
And what kind of path led you to be able to do that? It just sounds like the really cool jobs that when we're in elementary school and we like animals, we think, I'm going to work at a zoo and direct all of the animals. What was your career path like?
It started very similarly. When I was a child, I've always been a huge lover of animals and the outdoors and loved going to my local zoo and aquarium growing up. I grew up back east in New York State, but always kind of thought that was a really cool job that everyone would want, and so I wouldn't get to do it because it would be so competitive and all of the cool people would get to do it. So when I started in college, I knew I wanted to focus on the environment, and after school, moved to Washington, D.C., and worked for several nonprofits and worked in the government for a little bit, working on wildlife conservation issues. And while I was there, started volunteering at the National Zoo in Washington, D.C., just for fun on my spare time. And I started enjoying my spare time volunteering more than my paid jobs and began transitioning my career to work at the zoo there, and was fortunate to start as an animal keeper at Smithsonian's National Zoo, where I worked for several years to gain experience before applying for management positions, which is what curators are in the zoo world. So I got a position at the Buffalo Zoo in Buffalo, New York, and then just a few years ago moved out here for this position at Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium.
You said curator is that management position. In an art world, curator is the person that gets to pick out what goes in the collection. Do you get to, like, pick out which animals you have at Point Defiance, or is there something a little bit different when it comes to living things?
It's similar but different. So the title curator in the zoo world is a holdover from when zoos were more like menageries and living art museums with a collection of animals for people to come look at. Modern zoos are much more evolved into education and conservation organizations. So curators, while we still do manage the animals in our care and help make decisions about how best to care for them, we also do other things beyond just picking what animals are there. We are supervising the animal keepers. We're assisting with research. We're assisting with conservation programming and education programming. So it's evolved into a much more involved position. But it does have that root in the art world of a curator in helping to decide what is presented to our visitors.
How are the animals being taken care of during the park closure? Because we've been closed now for about a month statewide, kind of, and that includes the Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium. So is anything looking any different right now?
Yeah, the Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium has been closed since mid-March now, closed to the visitors. But animal care staff and our veterinary staff are all considered essential. So those staff have still been coming to work the same amount and providing the same level and quality of care that the animals would get if we were open to visitors. So the animals, other than not having many people looking at them, really don't notice because they're getting the exact same quality of care. We've been fortunate to be able to focus on those animals, making sure they're doing really well despite all of the chaos and drama that us humans are going through.
And I heard that there was actually one of the big cats at a zoo back east, like you mentioned, that had tested positive for coronavirus. Do we have to worry about any of the animals in our park here getting any kind of sicknesses?
If it was determined that a tiger back at the Bronx Zoo tested positive and some other cats there were showing symptoms, so taking that into consideration, we've been providing extra levels of precautions to protect the animals at the zoo from getting any sort of virus or disease from us humans. We already do that on a regular basis because there's a whole host of diseases that are called zoonotic diseases that are able to pass between humans and non-human species. But in light of this particular virus and the types of animals that are susceptible, like cats, we put extra precautions in place, including a lot of the social distancing that humans are used to, wearing masks and gloves, washing our hands regularly, staying a safe distance from each other as much as possible to make sure our animals are safe. The good news is, at least for cats, is that it has the virus. They seem to recover from the virus, barely just show symptoms, where it hasn't yet been shown to be potentially lethal the way it has been in humans.
And you said that you're not really noticing any differences in behaviors from the animals, except that there's no humans kind of there to watch them. But in my experience visiting the zoo, sometimes there are animals that seem to be a little bit more interactive with the visitors. I'm thinking especially the marine mammal creatures that will sort of twirl around as they're swimming and seem to wave at you and roll over. Are those things that the animals are doing regardless of having no visitors?
To a certain extent, yeah. So you're right. There are some animals that really do seem interested in people and are energized or curious when visitors are around. So we've noticed some of those animals, like the walrus, will still pay particular attention to any human who walks by. We're taking extra time to spend time with them. Similarly, some of our animal ambassadors who are in the Wild Wonders Outdoor Theater, who are used to getting out and exploring zoo grounds and interacting with people, they still are getting out and about and taking their tours. So we're making sure those animals get that special time. Some of the more quiet and reclusive animals are exploring a little bit more and enjoying their space. But across the board, most of the animals are pretty used to being in human care and don't react any differently to whether it's a large number of people or a small number of people. And in this case, it's just the staff that they get to see, and their health and well-being has been consistent all the way through.
Now, I know that your specialty is the marine mammals and the birds, but I'm a cat person, and I, on all of my occasions visiting Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium, have yet to see the clouded leopards. I mean, I respect greatly that they are kind of more shy creatures, and so I kind of walk by, and I'm like, nope, not seeing them today. Have you gotten to see them? Are they kind of like more out there now that there's fewer people coming by?
You're exactly right. They are a very shy and kind of reclusive cat. So I've noticed that I've been able to see them a little bit more when I go by their enclosure. Now, the keepers, the people who care for them every day, would probably tell you they get to see them all of the time and it's no different. But from a visitor's perspective, their exhibit is designed specifically for them to give them a lot of hiding places and a lot of space to be private and reclusive. And without a lot of visitors around, you get to sit and wait more quietly for a longer time. And I've been able to enjoy seeing animals like that, like the clouded leopards and the red wolves, who sometimes are harder to spot when you're in a busy, crowded, rushed zoo. And on quiet, empty days, if you take the time to sit and wait patiently, they're a little more active and you're able to see them a little bit more.
Now, can you take us on like a little visualization of the path that you kind of follow as you're going through the marine mammal exhibits and areas of the zoo?
Yep. So I primarily work in the Rocky Shores and Tundra areas. So as you come down the hill past the New Pacific Seas Aquarium, you'll enter the Rocky Shores area. It's a winding path and goes first past our Pacific walrus, Middick and Puckuck, who are two young boys who joined us just this past November. Then you'll pass the Harbor Seal and California Sea Lions. We have 4 sea lions and 3 seals, and they take turns using that pool. From there, you can go downstairs into our underwater viewing area, where you'll see underwater views of our puffins, as well as the walrus, seals, sea lions, and sea otters. And you'll come above ground in the puffin aviary with our horned puffins, tufted puffins, and common murres. And you'll leave the aviary and see our sea otters again above ground. Then you'll continue down the path and go inside to see our polar bears and past the Arctic fox and then around the corner to the muskox. I also have the special privilege of working with our Magellanic penguins, which are a little bit geographically remote. They're further up into the zoo, past our Wild Wonders outdoor theater. So they're a little bit further away, but also part of the animals that I care for.
I think there's something really special and ingenious about having the penguins far separated from the polar bear and walrus, because there's a lot of times for little kids, you think that all animals that live in wintry ice areas kind of all live in the same place, but there's those penguins are from the southern hemisphere. It really helps us to sort of visualize, nope, these animals don't coexist in any natural spaces. Was that intentional in terms of where the penguins got placed?
I don't know. That is a good question. I'm not sure if it was intentional, but you're absolutely right. It does help explain that geographic difference, because a lot of people, I think, are used to seeing representations of penguins and polar bears in the same place when they live in exactly opposite parts of the planet. Polar bears being a northern hemisphere, North Pole species, and penguins residing exclusively in the southern hemisphere. So it does help show that geographic distance. But then we have the benefit of having puffins closer to the polar bears as kind of the northern hemisphere equivalent of a penguin, as some people like to say. So we have black and white birds, but both from different hemispheres of the globe.
I do have to ask a little bit more about the puffins, because it is Sam's favorite animal. He likes to say that it's as awesome as a penguin and it can fly. So can you rattle off some like cool puffin facts for us?
Oh, gosh, I will do my best. Yeah, so we have two of the three species of puffins here at Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium, both horned puffins and tufted puffins, which are also called crested puffins. The tufted puffins in particular are native to Washington State. So you would see them out on the coast outside the Olympic Peninsula and historically up around the top of the peninsula into the straits. They are a species of concern. Their population has been declining rapidly because of things like climate change and the impact on food availability and things like that. So they are a really special bird to get to see out here in Washington. They mate for life, so they'll choose a mate and that pair will stay together as long as both of them are alive, and they will return to the same burrow every season. They nest in big colonies of usually hundreds or so of birds together. They'll lay eggs in their burrows. Both parents take turns incubating the egg and taking care of the chick that hatches. That chick will stay underground in that underground burrow until it is fully grown and lost all of its baby feathers, and then it fledges, totally able to fly and fend for itself. So once it's out of the burrow, it is on its own and has to fend for itself. So they're really cool, interesting birds. When they are in nesting season, they're up in their colonies on rocks and in hillsides. But otherwise, they're pelagic, meaning they stay out on the ocean the entire time, fishing and rafting together, and only really come up onto land into those burrows during breeding and nesting season.
That's fascinating. That if we ever got the chance to see one of the puffins in our state, as few as there may be at this time, we could pretty much guarantee that we were not seeing a baby puffin. Because you said that they stay underground the whole time?
They stay underground until they've lost all of their baby feathers and are fully fledged. So you'd be able to tell if it was a juvenile, because their coloration would be slightly different. Adult puffins, especially in breeding season, tufted puffins have bright yellow tufts of feathers on the side of their head, and their beak and feet will be bright orange, whereas juveniles won't have those bright colors in those crests. They'll look like more like a gray and white pattern. So you can tell if it's younger just by the color, but size-wise, it will be the same size as a full-grown adult, and it'll be eating and fending for itself the same way the adults do.
Gotcha. So the grown-up puffins are the ones that have kind of the grandpa eyebrow looking kind of things?
Correct. Yeah.
Awesome. Now, Bluffin is Sam's favorite bird, and I know that in speaking to one of your counterparts at Northwest Trek, he had said, well, you know, nobody has their favorite animal. We love all our animals equally, but is there a particular species of animal or a particular member of the groups of animals at Point Defiance that is one that you love a little bit more equally than the others?
A good way of putting it, and he's absolutely right. It is really hard to pick your favorite, just like parents don't generally say who their favorite child is because we love them all equally. And I personally find every animal interesting. There's no animal or living creature that doesn't have something really interesting and cool about them. But in working with the animals that I get to work with and focusing on marine mammals, I do have some favorites. And in terms of animals that I'm most comfortable with, one in particular is our California sea lions. I've worked with sea lions my entire career in the zoo field, and we have two young sea lions with us, Boomer and Eloise. They were both orphans off the coast of California and came to us because they weren't able to be returned to the wild and needed a new home. So it's been really interesting and fun to work with them and watch them grow up and to be able to provide them a home that they wouldn't otherwise have out in the wild. So while I do love every animal that I work with, and I can't say that I have a favorite, I do really enjoy working with Boomer and Eloise.
They sound like a total blast, those two. Is there anything about maybe Point Defiance Soon Aquarium that perhaps even like frequent visitors might not know or realize?
One thing that many people might miss is when you're entering the zoo, the main plaza when you come in is a globe, and particularly a globe depicting the Pacific Ocean and the Pacific Rim countries. That's because the animals at the Point Defiance Zoo are specifically selected to represent the habitats along the Pacific coast. So my Rocky Shores and Tundra animals represent the North American Pacific coast, and then our Southeast Asia habitat represents the Asian side of the Pacific coast. We include Hawaii and other Pacific countries in our selection of animals. So that's something that most people might not notice. Another thing I'm not sure everybody knows, but fans of the zoo will know, our red wolves are an exception to that rule. Red wolves aren't from the Pacific Rim. Red wolves are endemic to the Southeast United States, and they're a highly endangered canid here in North America. Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium was one of the first facilities to partner with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to help protect and conserve that species many years ago. So Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium is one of the leaders in protecting that species and helping to develop a reintroduction population. And we care for the largest group of red wolves in the world. I don't think many people know that.
Wow, it doesn't seem like right here in Tacoma you have necessarily one of the largest captive populations of, well, I guess anything. So that is a really cool thing that I certainly didn't know. How can people find out about when Point Defiance might be reopening?
Definitely keep track of our website, pdza.org, and all of our social media outlets. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We have a YouTube channel and TikTok now even, and we'll be posting everything there because we're excited to welcome people back as soon as it's safe and appropriate to do so. So I would check all of our social media platforms, whatever is most appropriate to you, and stay tuned. If you're already a member or visited the zoo in the past and you're on our email list, you will also get all sorts of e-newsletters keeping everybody up to date as to when things might be opening up once it's appropriate to do so.
Malia, one more question. You are the birds curator, so I have to ask about the peacock because it was kind of alarming the first time. So what's with the peacock? Why is he out?
That's a good question. He gets to go wherever he wants to go. Peacocks tend to be territorial, so he tends not to stray too far, but we do check on him every day. He gets all of the food and shelter and vet care that all the other animals get to do, but he gets to be free ranging. And that comes with some interesting challenges because sometimes he likes to interact with people more than the people want to be interacted with. And then sometimes it's the opposite where he wants to get away from folks, and kids are usually really excited because he's such a beautiful animal. So he has his own level of confidence and will approach people particularly during breeding season when he's really feeling himself. So he'll have his big, beautiful tail feathers, and he'll go around challenging anything that he thinks is somebody that he needs to challenge. And that's when he tends to interact with people the most. Or if you have yummy treats that he's trying to beg you to share with him, that's probably when most visitors will have encountered Mr. Peacock. He doesn't have an actual name, although I'm sure a lot of people do have names for him, but officially he's just Purple Peacock because of the color of his leg band.
I'm fairly certain that the kids at Science and Math Institute affectionately refer to him as Frank. That was last I heard. Needless to say, if we do have any of those treats in our pockets and everything, I'm assuming that just like all of the other non-human animals at the zoo, we refrain from letting him partake in any of those things.
You're absolutely correct, and thank you for pointing that out and making that suggestion. Yep, all of the animals at the zoo get very carefully prescribed diets to make sure they stay healthy, so we ask that you don't feed any of the animals at the zoo, and even the wild animals need to keep their natural diet. So bring whatever food you bring to the zoo when you visit, please keep it just for yourself and let the animals eat the more healthy animal food that they get from us.
Well, I'm really excited and can't wait until the zoo and aquarium are back open again. Malia Somerville, thank you so much for joining me today on KTQA Daily Briefing.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a joy talking to you, and I really hope to get to see you and all of your listeners as soon as possible.
Malia is the Marine Mammal and Birds Curator at Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium.
I don't care what anyone says, that peacock has it out for specifically me. You can dial 311 for the City of Tacoma non-emergency information line. Dialing 211 will connect you to statewide community resources. Our email address is daily at ktqa.org. You can call or text Sam and Becky at 253-330-8821. See you tomorrow.
KTQA LP 95.3 Tacoma.